Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Marjorie Papps, the host of Caregiver and Physician Conversations, sponsored by eCareDiary.com. I am a speaker, facilitator, and co-author of Enrich Your Caregiving Journey, a book which explores your personal caregiving resources through stories and provides practical tools and tips to keep you balanced and resilient as you provide care for others. The purpose of our show is to provide practical information and tips for both family and professional caregivers, particularly on how to have meaningful, collaborative conversations for patient healing. Today, I welcome Dr. Deborah German to the show. Dr. German is a physician, a rheumatologist, and the founding dean and vice president for medical affairs at the University of Central Florida College of Medicine in Lake Nona Medical City. She did her medical and specialty training at Harvard, Rochester, and Duke, and has been in leadership roles at Duke and Vanderbilt medical schools and has been a CEO of a hospital. Our topic today, training physicians for the 21st century and what that means for caregivers and their families. As always, we will open the phone lines, so please call us at 347-857-3399 and touch 1 when prompted. I'll repeat that number again later in our show. Dr. Deborah German, welcome.
Thanks, Marjorie. I'm delighted that you're addressing the topic of physician training and what that means for caregivers and their families.
You know, Deborah German, what you're doing at the University of Central Florida Medical School provides a model for physician training everywhere. For our listeners, they need to know that the school is relatively new, and you're now into your third year. Would you begin by telling our listeners just how students are selected?
I'd be happy to. You know, we have thousands of applicants to our medical school. For our charter class, we had 105 applicants per seat in the class.
Oh.
And from these thousands of applicants, we invite several hundred for interview. And they spend an entire day with us, and we evaluate them not only from the paperwork and from the scores that they've had in their educational training, but during the day of the interview and evaluation, we try to determine not only whether they have a head for medicine, but whether they have a heart for medicine. And we have a committee of physicians, scientists, students, and community members who evaluate all of this data and together rank the candidates for a position in the school. So there's no one person who can decide if a student gets in. And with all of these eyes looking at them and with the strength of the evaluation, we feel like we get an extraordinary class of students.
Oh, this is amazing. Would you, I think it's so fascinating, Dr. German, when you talk about the head and the heart for medicine. Would you explain to our listeners what you mean by that?
Well, you know, it's traditional to look and make sure that the students are bright. They take an MCAT test, medical college admissions test. We have their GPA, their grade point average from college, and we can see how well they do on tests and whether or not they can handle complex thought processes and do complex analyses. And, of course, all of that is necessary for a career in medicine. But sometimes you can have a student who scores really highly on all of those tests who just doesn't have any interpersonal skills and who doesn't know how to think about people and engage people and interact with people. And medicine is a very human profession. So we look for that as well. And we look at whether or not they've had a desire to do volunteer work and what kind of volunteer work they've done. Have they worked in a hospital setting? Have they done the kinds of things that show they really have a heart for medicine and a sincere and honest desire to help others?
This is fascinating, and I know that you are breaking a lot of ground in doing just that at the University of Florida or Central Florida Medical School. Would you say, Dr. German, is there anything else that's currently missing in physician training?
Well, I think, especially from the point of view of your listeners, one of the things that some doctors have and others don't is this, what I call the spirit of inquiry, and that is the willingness to go beyond the obvious, to ask the questions that sometimes doctors don't ask. So medical school teaches about disease, but it also teaches about health, prevention, diagnosis, treatment, and you know, every student can't learn all of the details of every discipline. So what's missing is instilling in our students this spirit of inquiry, which is an intense curiosity about each patient and about that patient's individual needs. And of course, that curiosity extends beyond the patient to the patient's family, to the patient's caregiver, and to the patient's place in community and in society. And when physicians take all of that into account, some might call it holistic medicine, and they ask those questions in the context of a patient visit, they can accomplish a lot more than a physician who simply focuses on the pathophysiology of the complaint that the patient brings to the doctor's office.
Absolutely, and I know from having been a caregiver that all caregivers out there, while somewhat reticent sometimes with physicians, are just waiting to be there with physicians as a partner to them. And it sounds to me like your spirit of inquiry would bring caregivers and families out when a physician does this. Would they would begin to realize that, oh, this physician would like for me to be a partner in the healing process. And as you say, the help that this is going to give to the patient is just exponential beyond just going with the head and asking typical medical questions and not allowing the family in.
The heart for medicine is a really important part because that's what really drives the spirit of inquiry. You know, if you have a heart for medicine, you see when your patients are suffering, you see when their families are suffering, and you'll ask questions beyond, you know, where is the pain and how often do you feel it. You'll want to know more about the environment in which that pain or that chronic condition exists.
Yes. Would you give us an example of how this the spirit of inquiry can guide a physician in ways that lead to better diagnosis and treatment?
Oh, sure. Well, I can give several examples. I mean, a simple example would be a typical patient who maybe has chest pain, goes to see their physician with their chest pain, and the physician does a complete and thorough evaluation, blood tests, images, electrocardiogram, everything. And at the end of that evaluation, the physician might say to the patient, I have good news for you. There's nothing wrong with you. We can't find anything wrong. And the physician who lacks the spirit of inquiry might just be very happy at that point to tell the patient that there's, quote, nothing wrong with them. And yet there's a patient standing before that physician with chest pain, and the pain is still there. So the intellectual exercise is complete, and the physician is happy because they know this patient is not going to die. But the patient is very unhappy and unsatisfied because the problem still exists. So in many physicians who have the spirit of inquiry, they might then say, you know, I know that it's not these things, and these are the things that would most likely kill you. Now we need to figure out what it might be. And then they might go through a series of other evaluations and ask a series of other questions that might be related to diet, or that might be related to exercise, or that might be related to the stress in that person's life, and to help uncover the diagnosis. Another example that I can give that comes from my own practice several years ago, I had a patient who came to me that had aches and pains all over his body. He was a young man, young in his 30s, and he was really incapacitated from doing his work. He hurt all over and just really couldn't do his job. And he'd seen several physicians and had been diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia and a variety of other nonspecific conditions. And I went through and did a complete evaluation of him, just as all the other doctors had done. And basically, I got similar results. And so I said to him, I don't have an answer, but what I really need is to take some time with you. What I'd like to do is spend an hour with you and do a really detailed, thorough history. So he came back for another visit, and I did that. And I ended up doing a complete dietary history and learned that he drank something like 10 liters of Coke a day.
Oh,
and
my.
What he had, I know, what he had was a caffeine addiction. But no one had ever asked him how much Coke he drank in a day. And I started with, when you wake up in the morning, what do you eat? And I had him take me through a typical day of what he ate and drank. And that was when it came out. And over a period of 6 months, we weaned him off the Coke, and all of his symptoms went away. So that's an example of the spirit of inquiry. And it leads you to go beyond what you know as a physician to find out more about your patient. And it takes you into unknown and uncharted territory that sometimes leads to an answer.
That is a stunning example. And that's just amazing. And I loved it when you said that can take you into areas that you don't necessarily know about. And it sounds to me like the physicians at the University of Central Florida Medical School get training in that kind of trust your intuition or take risks, go beyond where your knowledge is. And am I right about that?
Yes, and we actually have a course for them. The faculty call it the FIRE module. I like to call it the Keep the Dream Alive course, but it's a course where they take something that's of interest to them, and it could be, for example, chronic disease. It could be caring for caregivers, or it could be basic science research, and each student designs a project of their own interest to explore and ask an unanswered question, and over the course of the first 2 years of medical school, to explore the answer to that question that is not yet known. And this is part of a larger curriculum that allows our students to explore the unknown in medicine and to develop a spirit of inquiry.
That is amazing. And do you have any unanswered questions that have become more answered in the last 3 years? I bet you do.
Well, we do. We have students who've presented their work at national meetings, and some have won actually research grants to pursue their work further beyond the 2 years, and they're in such a variety of different disciplines. You know, Marjorie, we also have places in our curriculum where we teach our students about caring for the family and caring for the caregivers. We have, in addition to just exploring things that are unknown, you know, there are things that we know about helping people, and we're trying also to make sure that in the broadest sense we teach our students about those things as well.
So it sounds like all the way along the way, this whole issue of holistic care and including broadening just I think sometimes the medical model is called patient autonomous. I know just a little bit around these words, Dr. German, but it sounds to me as if what you're going for is a broadening of all of that, a holistic approach that from the very beginning of the student's training, that they're in that world of let's look at the big picture and let's dig deep for all of those unanswered questions.
Mm-hmm. I think we have to continually remind ourselves as we're training young physicians that although our job is to train them and our focus is on the young physicians and making sure that they know what they need to know and that they're prepared to manage the medical problems – our focus is on them, but we need to be sure that they know that their focus needs to always be on the patient and the patient's family. And sometimes when you're in a learning environment where the focus is on you, when you go out into practice, you take that with you and you feel that the focus is on you. And that translates into doctors who believe that the whole point of seeing a patient is the intellectual exercise of making a diagnosis and determining treatment. And that's very important. It's the core, but it's only a part of it. And then, and our job is to teach them that, to teach them that well, and to have them realize that it's about the patient and making the patient's life better. And that sometimes goes beyond making the diagnosis and delivering the treatment.
What an important distinction. And I know that for myself, and I'm sure for all of our caregivers listening, that gives all of us a real comfort in knowing that physicians are being trained in this way and at this time. I'd like to transition us and open up the phone lines for any questions that our listeners might have at this point. Again, please give us a call at 347-857-3399 and touch 1 when prompted. Is there anyone on the line today? Anyone there? Well, if not, we have pulled some questions that are frequently asked, and some of them have been on social media. And I've got some questions here that make a great segue from what Dr. German was just discussing. And that has to do with medical students and their point of view. So our first question is, medical students are young and healthy. Is it hard to get them to understand the depth of need that comes with illness and how it affects families and caregivers?
Wow, Margie, that's a great question. Sometimes it is hard because when you're young and you're in your 20s and 30s, you feel invincible. And some of our medical students are in that phase of their life. On the other hand, some of them have grandparents and parents and siblings who've suffered illnesses. So there's a real variety of ability to really understand the effect that an illness has on a family. One of the things we do to bring that home is we bring patients into the classroom. So as the students are learning, we bring patients in who share the realities of their situations. We also bring patients' families. So when we bring a patient into the classroom, we might also bring a spouse who's caring for the patient. And it's always interesting to watch the students observe this interplay. Another place where medical students are really touched and really understand the depth of need is in pediatrics. Because when a 20 or 30-year-old medical student meets an 8-year-old cancer patient, yeah, it really doesn't matter if they've ever had any experience with disease. They were all 8 years old at one point. Many of them have siblings. And that is usually the first young patient they have with a terminal disease is a heart-wrenching experience for our young students. So this is another way to bring the depth of need. And when they work with the parents and the siblings of these young children that are suffering, it begins, I think, to open their awareness for the larger issue that an illness presents. And we actually look for these qualities in our admissions process. The students get to write a personal statement and to tell us about why they're interested in a career in medicine. And many of them, in their personal statements, will relay to us a story about a family member who was ill or someone else who's had a powerful effect on them. And oftentimes, these are the reasons that these young people choose careers in medicine. So it's an interesting question.
It really is, and it sounds like you've developed a series of ways, almost like a 360 surrounding the student with all these real examples from the real world. That is just terrific.
And let me add one more thing to that.
Please.
You know, all of our medical students attend a hospice. And this includes interactions not only with the terminally ill patients, but with their families. And they really get a sense. This is not the norm for medical schools. They really get a sense of that part of caring for patients that is not always seen in medical education.
Yes. So you're, you know, the words that are used often is, you know, that the future is about healing, not curing. That it used to be that medical school taught how to cure, and now the whole process of healing and caring is the focus.
Well, I would say that we have to do both.
Uh-huh. All right.
Because when a person comes in and they're diagnosed with, let's say, breast cancer, the very first thing they want is cure.
Exactly.
And if we can deliver that, we do. And then if it turns out that it's too far gone, it's progressed too far, then we need to very quickly transition ourselves into healing and care. And we can be delivering the healing as we're delivering the curing. But in my mind, it's not an either or. We have to be able to do both, and we have to be able to do them both simultaneously.
Fabulous. And thank you so much for making that distinction and for bringing that together. Great. Well, another thing that is intriguing is, as you know, students need to be surrounded by models, or, you know, to some degree, models of what you're aiming for. So how about the faculty? How do you make sure that they are the right role models for the students?
Well, we have a probably even more rigorous faculty selection process than we do for students. We look carefully, of course, at a prospective faculty member's history and background to see what they've done, and of course have many references on them. And then they come for a couple of days, and they spend a couple of days with us, and they give presentations and they're asked questions, and the entire team that's here evaluates them. So we look for faculties that will inspire this spirit of inquiry in our students. And when I interview the faculty, I often ask them, I say, how do you instill that spirit into students? And we listen to what they say, and a lot of times we learn ourselves new things because we have chosen great people, and sometimes we learn that this is not somebody we want on our faculty. I think we have, as a new school, we have the ability to select new people who all fit a new mode. We don't have a lot of legacy faculty who maybe come from a different time.
Yes. What about, you mentioned that now and again there might be a faculty member who isn't just quite hitting it right. What happens, and we have just a couple minutes left, but I'd like to get this question in. What happens if the medical school accepts a student who lacks the skills to be a good doctor that you've mentioned earlier?
That's very important. Well, we monitor the students, and again, we have an integrated grading system where the grades are not, again, based solely on your performance on the test, but your performance with your peers, your performance with your patients, and we monitor these things. And if there's a student who doesn't get along well or doesn't seem to have the interpersonal skills needed for the career, we monitor more than every semester. It's, I think, three or four times a year. We have what we call a student evaluation and promotion committee. And they review every aspect of every student's performance. The goal is to identify students who need help, to help them. And then if we determine after many attempts at helping them that they can't be helped, we dismiss them.
But always giving them the chance. And that sounds great. They're surrounded by everything that is possible to surround them with. And I know that, you know, often if a person doesn't have everything that's required, that once they see the models around them and the people around them doing behaving differently, that then there is that typical tendency to just fall in line and to become the student, the medical student, the physician that they really want to be. So that's just terrific. Well, I'm so sorry, but our time is quickly dwindling away, and I want to thank so much Dr. Deborah German for giving us insights and for leading a progressive, cutting-edge physician training at the Medical College at the University of Central Florida. Thank you so much, Dr. German.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
We will be airing Caregiver and Physician Conversations again on Tuesday, March the 27th at 2 p.m. Dr. David Decker, director of the Florida Cancer Institute, will be my guest, and we will be discussing the key skills that successful caregivers need when a loved one is first diagnosed with cancer. And tune in next week to eCare Diaries' continuing radio series, Empowering Family Caregivers, when Susan Bida, one of the co-founders of eCare Diary, will interview Dietrich Stowe, author of 3 Months, A Caregiving Journey from Heartbreak to Hope. I want to thank you again so much for tuning in today. This is Marjorie Pabst. You can access my information at www.pivotalcrossings.com. Thank you all so much for tuning in, and our thanks to Dr. Deborah German and eCare Diary. Goodbye.